It's the Morning Rush, live at 5.
All right, give me the lay of the land. Who's on the show today? Who's not on the show? We'll start with CTV Morning Live. Who's doing our news?
Annette is back.
Great. Okay, be good to talk to Annette this morning. And I don't know whether she had vacation time or what was going on. I suspect with two young kids in the house, she's probably been like me a little bit with every day. It seems like my kids are sniffling and coughing and sneezing and bringing something home.
Something new. Speaking of that, how are you feeling? You feeling better today?
A lot better than yesterday.
Awesome. Yeah.
Still a little bit of, went away in the afternoon, but I feel my throat still a little sore on just on one side, but I feel more energetic and I don't have the sweats.
Perfect.
You know, you get the chills and the sweats. And it's funny because I took my temperature a couple of times and didn't have a fever, but I could feel hot. You know that?
That cold sweat is my least favorite feeling in the world, so I totally get it.
Terrible.
Yep. Well, today we have Karen Gordon on, coming on for Reputation Rescue, which I'm very excited about. Obviously, Dr. Dworkin as well, coming up right before the...
Did we agree on what to... Because we sent a lot of texts last
night. Yeah, absolutely.
What are we going to talk to him about?
Dementia vaccines, what they are and if they can become available.
Yeah. Like a lot of people, I have some family history with dementia, so you hope you're not seeing your own future.
Yep.
But if you are, the idea of a vaccine is a pretty enticing one.
Yeah.
My understanding of it is, and you know, I'm not a doctor, that's why I'm going to have a doctor on.
Yeah.
That dementia isn't necessarily one thing. There are a couple of different, so does the vaccine cover one specific kind of brain illness, or is it, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Targeting one.
But again, that's why I don't host. I don't guest on the segment. I host on the segment. I just ask the questions and try to get some answers. So, okay, that'll be interesting. Maybe Annette's already joined us here.
I'm here. Just joined in.
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
What are you thinking today? What's hot?
Well, what's hot this morning is that meeting last night. I don't know if you were just perhaps discussing this. I'm not sure.
No, we hadn't gone to it yet.
Okay. That OCDSB, Ottawa-Carleton District School Board trustee meeting ended last night without a decision on whether to impose a mask mandate. So as you know, trustees were set to vote on a motion by Dr. Nellie Kaplan-Mers. She wanted students and staff to be wearing masks again. And that mandate would have been in place, according to her, until three things. Ottawa Public Health declared influenza season over. CHEO's pediatric ICU occupancy is under 85% for 2 weeks. And OPH no longer recommends masking in public. So the meeting went longer than a lot of people expected. There were three delegates in favor, three delegates against. But there were several interruptions from the audience. At one point, some people were removed. A recess was called. We're told police were called to the meeting. So it adjourned at 10:30 last night without a decision. The motion's expected to be discussed at a later date now.
Yeah, I'm not surprised it got angry.
Yeah, it got ugly. Yeah.
People are... It goes beyond passion on each side. It goes into hysteria, I think. Not everyone is hysterical to their points of view. I think there's a very good argument to be made about masks in our schools right now. I do. Mm-hmm. I've said that to you on this show and on your show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not 100% convinced, but people, they're dug in one way or the other. You know, it's like nobody wants to open their mind. Nobody wants to hear what the other side is saying anymore. I was trying to make that point yesterday. And I got a call from or a text from a Jewish friend who said, you know, when you said the kind of rhetoric that Dr. Kaplan-Mirth brings out, which she did on the show yesterday, just...
I heard, yes.
Yeah. And then going on Twitter and quoting me in ways that just were inaccurate. We just posted the tape, and that sort of brought a bit of an end to that. But she said, you know, when you said that that her kind of anger brings on the angry reaction she gets, I was talking about within the context of the debate. And my friend said, you know, she's had some anti-Semitic comments over the years, which is a part of the story I don't recall, but take her word for it. And of course, I explained to her, well, yeah, that's certainly not what I was thinking of. Nobody deserves that. And that's the problem here, you know. And I regret that somebody would even think that I would go there. Because I mentioned on the show yesterday as a preamble before she came on, people using the C word against her and all, it's like, dial it back.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. Because there's good,
it
healthy
have
debate.
To get personal, but
absolutely.
It does, and I bet it got personal last night.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. Yeah, and that's quite unfortunate. There's no place for that. That kind of anywhere. It doesn't matter what you're arguing. Stick to the argument.
Yeah,
and don't make it
personal.
I was
just talking about the hyperbole within the argument itself and the anger that people show around it. And
yeah,
they're just so entrenched. And masks don't work. Well, I think they do in a lot of circumstances.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I was quoting yesterday, it was a doctor from Johns Hopkins University who said, you know, with RSV, they're not as effective. So there might be other measures that would work better. Okay. Mm-hmm. Was that not a legitimate point of view to discuss? I think it is.
It's a good question to ask. I mean, we should be asking these questions right now of physicians.
Yeah, and people saying, well, he's not a doctor, you know, why is he? I was quoting a doctor. I wasn't being a doctor.
Yeah.
Legitimate expert in their field from Johns Hopkins University. I think if that's misinformation, quoting from a CBC article, if that's misinformation, then I don't know what credible information is, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
that
I mean.
Doesn't mean that doctor's right either, by the way.
No, but that's the point of asking more questions of more physicians, getting the most amount of opinions and, you know, expertise. Like you said, you're not the doctor. Getting the doctors to weigh in on even what the other doctors are saying is important, too. Yeah, there's certainly two sides to this story. There's some believe that a lot of parents, teachers, educators, some people say, yeah, they should be masking again. Others say, no way, we're done with that. But, you know, that's
because
where
there's
a
downside to masking. And,
sure.
And it's not just their development as human beings. It's also medically there can be a bit of a downside. And when, you know, the reason I asked the question about its effectiveness with RSV specifically is that one of the other doctors we had on the show, a pediatrician and public health expert, mm-hmm. an epidemiologist, mm-hmm. We talked about the fact that RSV, the particles are bigger, they fall more, and so cleaning is now more necessary and hand washing is more necessary than it was with COVID. That we're kind of back to that. So, mm-hmm. you know, with young children who are touching their masks and then they play together and play with the same toys, is it going to be effective? Mm. I think the answer to that is maybe not specifically with them, but if more people are wearing masks, then there's just less of it in the community. So
right.
children, so, you know, after 2.5 years, I'm aware of the nuance here.
Yeah.
And not enough people are.
Yeah.
Because, boy, it's nuanced. Have you figured out where you stand on the idea of masks back in schools?
I'm torn on it, honestly, as a parent. I mean, but I can see both sides, 100%. Yeah. I mean, we do know masks made a big difference with COVID. There's no question. My children, as I've, you know, said many times, are very young. So my daughter in grade one, this is her first year after junior kindergarten and senior kindergarten seeing her teacher's face, experiencing education without a mask on. And there's no question I can tell my kids I think they're catching up now, but I think the first few months of school, there was like, wow, we are behind because of everything they've went through in the last few years. So there's a lot at play, but I also understand the risk that, you know, good friends of ours have a little baby and they live next door. And I think, geez, should we be masking them because the likelihood of my kids getting infected is less because they're a bit older. I mean, just with what we're seeing, and I'm going strictly off what we're seeing happening at CHEO. I worry that could we impact others, right? Like the little baby who lives next door.
They're probably just as likely to get
infected,
but they're not as likely to get really sick.
Sure.
I too saw a friend's baby. He sent me a video, little belly gasping for air. Pumping.
Oh, it's heartbreaking. Yeah.
It's scary.
It's so hard to watch.
So, you know, would I wear a mask in a crowded place to help that?
Yeah.
I'm sort of at the, if I'm in an indoor space and it's not crowded, I can still distance. I probably won't put on the mask.
Yeah.
But if I can't keep away from people, then I will wear the mask. That's kind of where I am. And people will criticize that too. I saw some of that. I think someone was insinuating they saw me in a supermarket not wearing a mask. So, probably. I was in a Farm Boy last week at mid-afternoon. There were like 12 people in the entire place. I didn't wear a mask.
Yeah.
But if I was in a crowded movie theater, might I wear a mask? Probably not, only because I just won't go now at that point. I don't want to sit there for 2 hours and watch a movie with a mask on.
It's a tough one. And, you know, again, now, I mean, look, we saw last week, it was on social media that even the medical officer of health was not locally. The Dr. Kieran Moritz recommended we wear a mask, and then he was in a public space not wearing one.
Yeah, so but you can't do that if you're the chief medical
officer. I agree, but that has a lot of people thinking that, well, if he's not wearing it, then why should we?
Well, first of all, that was pretty crowded.
Very much. And so
people were singing, which we were warned about a long time ago. I don't know. If you're the public health officer and you say we should, he recommends we all wear them in all indoor spaces, then you kind of got to do it. And if you don't, you can't be the chief medical officer of health. My view, he should resign.
Well, after that, too, it also brings into question then the seriousness of how, I think for a lot of people, then you wonder, well, how bad is it really if he's not wearing one?
Well, of course, because the vision of him not wearing it speaks louder than his words.
There you go. So then you go, well, he's strongly recommending it. So is that like public pressure, political pressure? Is he just saying that, but we don't really need one? When we have a lot of question marks around what's happening and not a very clear answer, therein lies the passion for the debate on either side, right? Some people, like exactly what happened last night, people will say, yes, we have to wear it, like, you know, passionately, and others will say, no, I'm done with it, it's over. When we were told, 2.5 years ago now, wear a mask, there's no question. This was strictly COVID. We were talking about that back then. People wore masks. We put masks on. We listened. We followed the rules because it was a scary time. And now with it being a little bit more, you know, there's no firm, hard recommendation.
Well,
or
also,
I guess rule,
you know,
if
we've
you
been
will.
Through it and we're used to it. So sadly, you get used to people dying every week in seniors' homes. And
that is
awful
to be getting used to any of it. And I mean, it's awful. We should not be getting used to kids being in hospitals struggling to breathe. That is not something we should get comfortable with.
No, but it also happens frequently, you know, during flu season. That's often that the emergency rooms are overcrowded with kids.
Well, and not so, the way they're seeing now, though. I mean,
not to this extent. I think there have been a couple of flu seasons in the last 20 years where it's been almost this bad. But you're right. The three things piling up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But COVID is just not, as I was trying to point out yesterday, it's not the main issue. I mean,
no.
I checked again this morning. Three kids in CHEO being treated for COVID, only four at SickKids in Toronto. Now, if that one of those kids is yours, it's not only four.
Right.
Your child.
It's everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't want to see that. But, you know, there are probably kids right now hospitalized in this province because of car accidents, and we're not going to stop driving.
Right.
So when do you cross the line and say, and I think it's a tougher sell, let's all wear masks because of the flu or RSV.
Right. Yeah.
But apparently even throwing COVID in the pile is not helping either, because people are just done with masks.
Yeah.
Because we forget.
And
it's hard to prove how well they worked, right? Because you don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
and people are
vaccinated. I survived okay. So maybe it wasn't so bad.
Right.
Well, maybe you wouldn't have survived if we hadn't.
Or if you hadn't been vaccinated, right? I mean, that's
right.
The other thing. We've been vaccinated, which is also keeping it from hospitalizing people as to the numbers it was before we were vaccinated.
Hey, good news there. Dr. Fauci was saying yesterday in the U.S.
Yeah.
That the new bivalent vaccine is probably the best yet.
Is that the one you got?
In terms of protection. I haven't had that one yet.
Oh, okay.
I haven't had a bivalent.
Oh, okay.
Not enough time had passed.
Oh, right.
So, and there's an advantage to gapping them too. It's so tricky to know exactly when and how to get
it. I got a bivalent, but it was the first strain.
Yeah, they're not talking about that one because they didn't use it.
Oh, great. So I got a dud.
No, I don't think it's a dud. I think it works too. But.
I joke. I know. I feel good. I've been vaccinated several times and feel very pleased about that. And knock on wood, hopefully I don't get very sick. But I mean, that's just it, right? I mean, it's
Rosie, you can jump
so
in,
so much
by
is
the
a
way.
Risk.
Don't. And then we could just chat all morning.
That's
doesn't mean
true.
We don't want you involved in the conversation.
Yeah, you guys are kind of getting it back together there. I love the conversation. I was actually just listening in.
I'll tell you what does happen for me.
And it feels so good.
Rosie, when the weather gets like this, though, like when we creep back up above the freezing mark today, like I get allergies kicking in again.
Really?
Yeah. Like even
so what, we're asking not to have the temperature go up?
Yes. I'm in other words saying
you want
keep
it
cold,
colder?
Like keep everything frozen, and then my allergies go away, and this is good.
You might be sniffling all week because we're going to be above that freezing mark. Yeah, we are. Might even get a little bit of rain midweek That's a possibility.
Come on.
I know.
Make up your mind, Rosie.
I know. Is it November or what? What's happening here? But yeah, exactly.
What's going on? I don't understand.
Unsettled weather. Just a little unsettled. That's all.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll get your full forecast coming up in the news. Annette, Rosie, thank you. I'll talk to you both later.
Okay.
It's our morning meeting. We hold it live at 5, weekday mornings, Monday to Friday. The Morning Rush coming up at 6. We're not finished, though. We don't have everything planned yet, so hang in with us here. It's the Morning Rush, Bill Carroll. All right, Katie Colbert, what are you working on for a couple of hours from now on Trending?
Sadly, not Christmas today. I'm keeping it back just for today. Just for today.
Okay, let me take off the Santa suit.
Well, jingle my bells.
There you go. Nice, BJ. Actually, it's kind of a little bit of some sad news. Chris Hemsworth is taking a break from acting as he just found out that he's at a high genetic risk for Alzheimer's.
I saw this. He was doing one of those Trace Your Roots DNA kind of shows, right?
Yeah, well, he was doing a Disney Plus docuseries called Limitless, where he tests his body and explores all these new ways to be able to live longer and healthier. You know, he's known as this kind of health kick guy, trying to be healthiest and at peak. And yeah, it's not looking too good. Here's the trailer for Limitless. It sounds amazing.
I want to discover how we can all live a healthier, longer life. I'll be taking on 6 of the toughest tests, pushing myself to the limit.
Yeah, so the Australian actor learned that he's got 2 copies of the APOE4 gene, which I did have to Google, wasn't entirely sure what that was. But it can increase your chances if you have 1 of these developing things, but he has 2. It was given from both of his parents, one of these genes. Mm. So it ups his chances of getting Alzheimer's up to 8 to 12% more than regular. Which is crazy. So
8 to 12%?
Yeah, chances of developing Alzheimer's 8 to 12-fold is what it says in particular here. I don't want to say percent.
Okay, but then, you know, as Dr. Dworkin, if he were here, he'd remind us. So that's 8 times or 12 times bigger than what number?
Yeah, exactly.
It's still a big increase, but if I have a 1 in a million chance and now it's a 12 in a million chance, it's very different than I have a 1 in 10 chance, and now suddenly it's like 100%. So
exactly.
But that's the danger with testing for things that you can't do anything about.
Yeah.
Like I understand women doing the BRCA gene test because there's action. It's drastic action you have to take, but there's action you can take. But in this case, what do you do with that information once you have it?
Well, you know, Chris Hemsworth, for example, he's been very career-driven. He's been super successful in the Thor movies with Marvel. I think he's going to take a break from acting and take a step back and try to spend more time with his kids and his wife and really reflect. He says it's not gone from acting forever, but just take some time while he's young and not experiencing any of these.
Wow, that's really hard.
Yeah.
Doesn't he have a brother, too, who's...
Yeah, Liam Hemsworth.
An actor?
He was
so
trending,
he must be the same thing.
Potentially, yeah.
Do they have the same... You have to ask, because it's 2022. Do they have 2 shared parents?
I'm not entirely sure. My knowledge on Liam Hemsworth isn't the best.
Because they could have a different mother, a different father.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure on Liam Hemsworth, but I will...
If you're the brother, you're worried about that now, too?
Going and getting checked, for sure. Yeah, sorry.
So you decide you're going to learn this. Maybe your sibling didn't want to know.
Yeah.
Now they know.
And he was also asked, because this was exposed in his docuseries Limitless, right? And he was asked, do you want to do this in front of the cameras? We don't have to. We found some information. You know, we want to get your raw reaction, but if you're not comfortable, like, warning. And then once he found out the news, they said, do you want to keep it in? Do you want to take it out? And he goes, you know what? Let's keep it in. This is good exposure for realizing, you know, it's anybody, no matter how healthy you are, how fit you are, how young you are, how old, this stuff affects you no matter what, right? So I think it was amazing for Chris Hemsworth to incorporate this and, you know, show his raw emotion. We have some of those clips coming up when we do training.
And I think there are some things you can do to delay the onset, to improve your outcome, and... Now it's on his radar, so he'll be watching for new developments and new drugs. Maybe this vaccine that we're going to talk about an hour from now. Maybe that could have an impact and help him. I don't know the answers to those questions, but I know someone who does.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, let's see.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really, that would be shocking to learn. That's why I don't want to know.
Exactly, exactly right. It says here about 25% of the population has one copy of this gene, but Hemsworth is in the 2.3%, 2 to 3% that inherited the gene from each parent. So his chances are a little bit higher. So that's crazy.
That's it for the morning meeting, live at 5. The 6 o'clock news coming up next.
And shout and let it all out. And scream and shout and let it out. We saying, oh, we oh, we oh, we oh.
This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
So if you're wondering if your kids are going to have to wear masks in school if they're in the public board here in Ottawa, the answer is no. And I think they've managed to kick the can down the road far enough that probably the crisis, well, I hope that the crisis will have passed fairly quickly and so it won't be an issue. But it got very ugly. It got really heated. The police were called. They just didn't even get around to a vote on this motion by a family physician who's now also a trustee, and Dr. Nilly Kaplan-Murth? Yeah, Dr. Kaplan-Murth. And PJ, let's not do that, okay?
Okay.
Let's not do that. That's actually one of the things that concerned me yesterday about this. I didn't appreciate that she was on the show and that she said that I started by saying COVID-19 is over. I did not. Then he said, we don't need to mask up. We do. I didn't say that either. Listen, I've done, and I don't, the proof is out there. I don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this. I've talked about it on radio and on TV. I've been in the frame of mind as a parent that, hey, if we're going to put masks in schools, maybe that's a good idea. I don't know. I don't know whether we should actually do that or not. So I was open-minded. I wanted to hear a point of view on it, given that I was quoting at least one other expert, and there have been a few who say, you know, because this is more RSV and flu, maybe masks are not as effective as they were against COVID, and maybe we should consider other methods. So I just wanted her reaction to that. So I went on Twitter to defend myself, and I thank the people who were quick to say, that's actually, I was listening, that's not what he said. In fact, what I said was, COVID is not the biggest part of the problem right now. And I've always said that I'm open-minded about masks in schools and maybe even in greater society. It's a tough one. But her absolute certainty that we must have masks, that anyone who has any other position she just gets angry with, it causes anger to ramp up. And that's the one thing, well, the couple of things I regretted about yesterday. One is that people then, like I said, I appreciated the defense. Facts are always a good defense. But I think people piled on too and questioned her mental health. I have no idea. We don't know what her mental health is. Oh, I just don't want to casually throw around words like crazy, and which people were doing on Twitter in my defense. My whole point was it gets too ugly, this debate. Let's not make it personal. Let's not do that. And I don't know what her, if she has mental health issues, that's between her and her doctor, and I hope she gets help. I don't know anything about that. So I don't think people should have taken it to that level. And I don't want to casually play the cuckoo clock or anything like that, PJ. I just don't. If that's really an issue, that's a serious thing. And we have no indication that that's really an issue. So, and, you know, it got too personal. It got too personal in my defense. And so I would urge you, like, keep it civil. You want to disagree with her on masks? You want to disagree with her on the facts? Let's do that. Hey, Bill Carroll did not say COVID is over. Here's the tape. That's one thing. You're a crazy person. That's too far. And a Jewish friend of mine said, you know, when you said she makes this debate too heated and brings about this kind of anger, you remember she's been the victim of anti-Semitism. I didn't remember that. I still don't recall that that's part of it. I'll take my friend's word for it. And that's certainly not what I intended. People, it doesn't have to go there. There's plenty of gray area about masks to have intelligent debate on both sides. But that's not what we're hearing from this school board trustee. There's no gray area. It's masks and that's it. And I don't want to hear it. And anybody who disagrees with me, I don't know if she genuinely just misheard me yesterday or she's she's so caught up in her own agenda that she heard what she wanted to hear. You know, just some crazy right-wing talk show host. I've never been that guy on COVID. I've never been that guy. I've never been anti-mask, anti-vaccine. I've tried to listen to the experts, but there are a growing number of experts say the downside of masking no longer justifies the upside of masking. And plenty of other doctors who say the opposite. That just makes it harder for us as parents to know what we want for our kids, right? So let's not make it personal and ugly. Thank you for defending me, but don't in my name take it to an ugly place. Let's not do that. There's plenty of room here for discussion about it. I just want to defend my reputation, right? Now, don't put me on, because people react without hearing the tape. Yeah, he's a crazy right-wing anti-vaxxer, anti-masker. What are you talking about? So I got lots of, you know, there's lots of proof that that's not true, because I don't have to rewrite history. My history is more recorded than the average person. There's lots of videotape of me on TV saying I'm open-minded about the idea of masks in schools. And there's lots of audio tape of me saying the same thing, including in the conversation with her. So I didn't appreciate being misrepresented by her, but I'm not going to stoop to her level. Let's not do that. It's 6:11. It's soccer day in Canada. That's the exciting part. Wow, we have all of our stars in the lineup. Canada's coach, John Herdman, yesterday, as he was getting ready, doing the media availability the day before. So today we face Belgium. Sadly, they're the favorites for the World Cup. That's going to be tough. But our coach said we got all of our big guys in the lineup, including, yes, Alphonso Davies.
At the end of the day, I mean, Fonzie's fit now. He's hit his markers. He's ready to go. I mean, he's flying and training yesterday, enjoying himself. You know, I think, you know, Canada are in a position now where we can field, you know, our strongest team. Everyone's came through well.
So we have our best chance of beating Belgium. And with that huge upset yesterday, Saudi Arabia over Argentina, they're calling it the biggest upset maybe in World Cup history. I'll have to take their word for it. Not something I followed closely enough to make that statement on my own. But that's got to encourage you if you're Canada, right? And you're not the favorite today. You got to be looking at it saying anything is possible. Once the ball is dropped, because that's my bias, hockey, right? They don't drop the ball. I guess there's an opening kickoff. Played a little soccer when I was young in Scotland, so I do remember that. I think you have to kick the ball forward, right? Can't kick it backwards. So by the end of the World Cup, I'll be acting like an expert on soccer because I've watched hours of it, but know that I'm not. But I want to be on this bandwagon. And I'm getting on this bandwagon, and no one is going to stop me. 2 o'clock this afternoon is when I'm going to get on board. The public safety minister, Marco Medicino, says in the early days of the Freedom Convoy, some MPs were actually concerned that the protesters would try to find where they live. Now, that doesn't mean it's true that they were going to try to fight, but that was their concern, and I understand that. I likely would have been concerned about that, too. The minister was testifying at the public inquiry into the Emergencies Act use. Medicino says security on Parliament Hill was a major concern before the protesters even arrived.
This was a movement that in some cases was prepared to attack our democratic institutions to force change around policies.
Federal carbon pricing, still a hot issue in the House of Commons during question period. Ottawa announcing that three Atlantic provinces will be subject to the price beginning next summer. And from what I was educated from the listeners yesterday in Atlantic Canada, a lot of people still burning oil to heat their homes. Not so common in other parts of the country. The environment minister accused conservatives of failing to take climate change seriously.
What I'm interested to know is, when will they have a plan to fight climate change? When will they help tackle this issue that is costing Canadians billions of dollars, Mr. Mm-hmm. Speaker, year after year?
My answer to that would be, when the COVID crisis has completely passed and things are returning more to normal and supply chains have been fixed and inflation is under control, then maybe we can tackle it. But right now, the house is on fire. We'll fix the leak in the basement later. That would be my answer. What did they answer? Well, I'll let you hear it later in the show. Can't give it all to you right now. Plus, look at the clock. It's 6:14, the morning rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
I need you like the flowers need the rain. I need you like the sun when the clouds turn.
This is the morning rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
Congratulations to yesterday's Bingoland Gaming Center Grand in Your Hand winner, Lizette Couture. We called. She did not answer. But she'll be $1,000 richer and able to, well, I guess, increase her fashion in her wardrobe. More haute couture for Lizette Couture. So congratulations to her. We'll have more magic words to give you, code words, later on in the show after the 7 o'clock news, after the 8 o'clock news, and throughout the day. So hang in for that. The Bank of Canada, what is going on with interest rates? I know we're all we're seeing inflation start to slow down a little bit, but interest rates are tough. If you're looking to buy a car or a house or something right now, it's difficult, and it's meant to be difficult. That's the whole point of raising the interest rates. They're trying to slow down the economy. The Bank of Canada Senior Deputy Governor Carolyn Rogers says the adjustment to higher interest rates will be painful for recent home buyers with variable rate mortgages. Speaking before the networking group Young Canadians in Finance in Ottawa yesterday, she says the share of households with a variable rate mortgage has increased over the last year.
Homeowners with fixed rate mortgages may also be looking at higher payments when they come to renew, depending on when they took out their mortgage and whether they have room to extend their amortization period. So the bottom line is that mortgage costs for some Canadians have already increased, and they will likely increase for most others in time.
Yeah, so if your rate was locked in for 5 years and you locked it in 3 years ago, what are interest rates going to look like in 2 years or 2 months when it expires? With a variable rate, listen, I talked to a lot of people about this when we bought our house. You know, the variable rate is invariably, it's lower. So, and I keep hearing the experts saying, over time, that's the best way to go. But I looked at it and thought, okay, but it doesn't look like it has much room to go down anymore. So why don't I lock it in? That's probably the first good decision I've made in a long time. Maybe that's still the right decision. I don't know. I'm not a finance expert. I can't give you advice on that. But it's tough, isn't it, trying to figure out what to do? But the good news is if you're in a variable rate situation and interest rates start to come down, your rates will go down. If you lock in now for 5 years, you're locked in at this level. Good luck with that. Roger says some recent home owners, though, are being especially affected by these increased costs.
Vulnerabilities in the form of escalating house prices and elevated levels of household debt that were further exacerbated over the pandemic. And the risk of a trigger that may affect financial stability has increased as a result of high inflation and the response of increasing interest rates. But there are very good reasons to believe that the financial system as a whole will weather this period of stress and remain resilient.
Oh, great. So the banks won't run into trouble, but it doesn't say anything for your poor neighbor who bought at the peak of the market last year and now is paying huge interest rates. Can you imagine? Because now you're underwater, right? You look at it and go, well, if I sell, I'm going to lose money. So I got to keep paying these high monthly rates just to stay where I am. That can be really discouraging. I've also been there at times too. That's the problem with being a broadcaster, where you often move every 5 or 10 years or so. And when you're younger, you're doing it to improve your career. When you're older, you're doing it to hang on to your career. Or you're just, you know, transitioning your life. Whatever it is, we all go through these periods in life, right, where you're moving a lot. And so I've experienced all of those situations in so many different cities and so many different housing markets. The one thing I'll ask myself when I'm sitting under a palm tree somewhere in my full retirement, I'll be saying to myself, should I have just rented all along and invested the money somewhere else? All this buying and selling, buying and selling, buying and selling. Did I really get ahead? The answer is I'll probably never know. Plus, if I hadn't paid that money into a mortgage every month, I don't think that I would have saved all of it. It was kind of a forced savings for me. I'd buy stupid things that you end up throwing out 2 years later, right? Anyway, I'm with you. If you're going through all of that, that's a tough one, but hopefully inflation gets under control and those interest rates start to soften a little bit for you down the road. 6:28, it's the Morning Rush. Good morning, I'm Bill Carroll. Coming up after the 6:30 news, Karen Gordon and Reputation Rescue. That's next.
Everyone has a reputation to defend. That's why on Wednesdays, we bring you The Reputation Rescue with Karen Gordon and Bill Carroll.
Maybe I should have called you yesterday, Karen, when my reputation came under attack on social media, but I just responded because that's what I do. But, you know, it's interesting. I was reminded that on social media, people say something and most people just automatically assume it's true. And then they respond to that, right? How dare he? What a crazy right-wing lying. Whoa, okay. Anybody want to stop to check the facts here? But they really don't, huh? That's got to be one of the most difficult parts of your job is that once a story or an idea is out there, even the truth is not going to get through to some people.
100%. You know, yesterday your interview with Dr. Kaplan-Mirth was a really interesting example of reputation management and what to do. One, you know, lesson number one is if there's tape of the interaction, be very careful with how you position it. You know, I didn't hear the interview live and then saw the tweet and thought, okay, tomorrow we are managing Bill's reputation. And then once I got into it and I went and listened to the interview, I thought, wow, this has been totally mischaracterized.
Well, the tweet, I got a text from a colleague in Toronto who said, did you say that COVID is over and that we don't need masks? I said, no, that's preposterous. Why would you say that? And he sent me the tweet and it says, a talk radio station just hung up on me. The host started by saying COVID-19 is over. It isn't. Then he said, we don't need to bring back masks. We do. When I started to explain a triple threat, a layered approach, he interrupted, shaking my head. So I responded with my position, which is COVID is not over. I think we should consider masks in school. I'm on the record a million times in the past month with both of those things. You were too busy yelling to hear. Luckily, I had thousands of witnesses. And very quickly, people who'd heard the interview said, that's not what happened. I didn't say that COVID is over. I said, it's not the biggest part of the problem, or words to that effect, right? It's not
your exact quote, which I wrote it down because I've listened now to the interview three times. You said it is not the main problem right now. That's your exact quote. You didn't say it was over. You didn't say not to wear masks. You didn't say any of that. So how?
And I interrupted her, Karen. Sorry to do that to you just now, but I interrupted her. I'm passionate about this one. I interrupted her. Not when she was trying to explain, but when she directly on the air attacked my credibility. Because you know in my job, you could disagree with my opinion, but if you think that I make up things, I'm play loose with the facts, I'm finished. That I've spent 40 years building that. And for her to say, as she did on the show, that this was misinformation, I have every right to step and go, whoa, what part are you talking about right now? Right? Because she said, you just said COVID is over. I said no such thing. Those words just came out of my mouth and those were not the words. So I know. So, and then when she just started to yell and scream, and my job as a host is partly, as you know, Karen, I'm responsible for what everyone says on this show. Somebody comes on and they have a rant and it's blatantly racist and I don't stop them. I'm held responsible. And the station empowers me to take care of its license and to follow the rules and to make sure that everyone on the show, you, her, Katie, PJ, everybody follows the rules. That's my job. I'm accountable for that. So of course I'm going to jump in and go, whoa, that's not true. And when I got the impression that she was just not going to listen, then I had to cut bait because she's no longer predictable. I don't know where it's going to go. So my duty and responsibility to the station is to then cut her loose. And that's what I did. And I would do the same thing again.
Well, it's caused quite a discussion on Twitter. There's been a lot of activity. I did some looking into Dr. Kaplan-Mirth, and I'm really sad about how this has gone on, because when you look at her biography and you look at all of her accomplishments, I really do want to hear what she has to say. I think, you know, all of that. And instead, what happened was this was the perfect storm of an interview gone wrong. She came out of the gate, like out of the gate angry, out of the gate yelling, out of the gate not, you know, misquoting you. And so that started. And what that's done, and what this whole Twitter discussion has done, is instead of focusing on her information, and instead of focusing on a cause she feels very strongly about, which is to bring back masks at school, this is instead now focused on the content or the style of the interview and the fact that you hung up on her. And it makes me, as a communications person, it makes me actually very sad that this is the result of what should have been a great interview. And don't get me wrong, I have all my vaccines. I get my vaccines as quick as possible. I will begin to wear masks again, and I did want to hear, but instead it just gets into this screaming fight, which ultimately led, if you followed her last night at the school board meeting, they didn't get resolution. They didn't get, you know, they weren't able to get it over the finish line that they're going to bring back masks or not bring back masks. So it just really, and I think it's a bit of a what's gone on in COVID, is we're just not listening. People aren't listening, you know, and that's a really unfortunate thing that's happening to a really important issue.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll pull the curtain back a little bit. If I feel strongly about something, I introduce the guest with my opinion and challenge them to tell me I'm wrong. When you hear me start by, and, you know, as I argue, I'll quote experts, especially on something that's technical and beyond my understanding and ability to offer you my own opinion. I can only say, you know, this, and that's who I was quoting, you know, Dr. John Hopkins University says maybe it won't be as effective. How, quoting from the CBC, how is that misinformation? But when I lead with that, it's because I'm playing devil's advocate, because I don't have the answer. As a parent, I don't know. And so I was challenging her with an expert opinion. Counter it. Why do you think he's wrong? That's where I was trying to go with that. But instead, I don't know if she heard what she wanted to hear, and she's just so angry. And then when I tried to make the point later that it's this kind of hyperbole and anger and such certainty that you're right on the issue that's fueling a lot of the anger and vitriol that's coming back her way. A friend of mine said, who was Jewish, said, well, you know, I interpreted that to mean she deserved the anti-Semitic comment she got. I said, look, I apologize if that's, I don't know that I even knew that before. It certainly was not on my mind. And I would absolutely wholeheartedly apologize to anyone who interpreted it that way, because I'm a communicator. If one person heard it that way, chances are a few did. So that was not the point I was trying to make. But that's the problem right now. Everyone is so angry. Like, even the people who defended me, I appreciated the ones who said, I heard it at the time. He did not say those things. You're characterizing him completely incorrectly. Other people posted the tape. That was fine. But then when other people got really ugly against her, like made it personal, the woman's crazy. I didn't want that defense. That's not where it should go. So I would just say today, don't use my name to take personal or anti-Semitic shots at her or anybody else. You are not in my corner if you're doing that. Let's argue with her position and even her attitude about the position. That's fine. But it doesn't need to get ugly and personal. I just think that's the problem right now. And that maybe the main reason masks won't work is because people are just too entrenched now. You could bring in all the mask mandates you want. People aren't gonna listen. But how do you... I don't know if I defended my credibility well enough yesterday. It felt like it sort of turned in my favor. But what do you do, Karen, when there are some people who are just not going to listen to the tape, or by the time they listen to the tape, they've made up their mind, so there's confirmation bias going on? Do you just then let it go?
I think if you take a look at the comments, so what you have to do, especially with Twitter, is you have to take a look at the comments. There's not a one-off solution. There's not. It really is depending on where it's going. There has been a lot of interaction on your back and forth. There's been a lot of retweets, a lot of comments, and the comments range from everything from Dr. David Jacobs, who has a really great comment about the fact that doctors need to listen, to then, like you've said, horrible, terrible comments that have no place anywhere in the public discourse. So you take a look. You did what you had to do, which was to go out and say, here's my case. There's been a number of people who have subsequently posted the audio, and the audio is your best defense. That's your best defense, is for people to listen and hear what happened and then make up their own mind. And so, you know, that's the best way to do it. You had no other choice than to do that. I think it was the right thing to do. And I think ultimately at the end, people are going to make their decision. The other thing, I heard this great analogy once that Twitter's like a bar fight and people are already, you know, a couple shots in, and it really is a bit of a cesspool of discussion. So you've got to take a lot of it with a grain of salt and not put a lot of credence into what the unnamed bots are saying, because they're going to say what they want to say, and you can't, they don't really reflect what's going on. So really,
also, don't you have to look at the source of it too? I mean, if it's someone who doesn't have a lot of followers and you have many more followers, then you just amplify it and you hurt your own reputation. I responded in this case because it was already starting to trend on Twitter. And so I thought, well, okay, my side of the story needs to get out there.
And you know, the doctor has 54,000 followers. That's not a small audience. No. And again, a great, she's a family doc who's an anthropologist who went to McGill and Fulbright and Yale. It really could have been a great interview. It could have been a great interview and would have been a perfect lead in to the vote at the board later. Like, this was part of a, you know, presumably a public relations campaign leading to the vote that happened the night, that night. And so, you know, the other thing, Bill,
because I was a parent, if she'd really listened, I'm a parent on the fence, waiting to be pushed over one side or the other. If she convinced me, she might have convinced a lot of other parents who are listening, which is the point of talk radio and what we do here. Then it might have gone differently at the meeting last night even.
Well, and you know, the interesting thing is when you look at Dr. Barry Dworkin and how many hundreds of times, if I had a dollar for every time I told you that is one of my most favorite segments of your show and I listen religiously, I can't tell you the number of decisions or conversations I've had with my own GP based on what I hear from Dr. Dworkin. You know, there's been a number of times where I'm like, oh, that's, maybe I should try that, or maybe I should do that, or maybe I should talk to my GP about that. Doctors, particularly medical doctors in the middle of a pandemic, they have a lot of sway and a lot of really helpful information. And I think this now is lost in a discussion of who interrupted who and who got hung up on, and the entire message is lost. The other thing, the final thing I'll say is, people need to know the show they're coming on to. You need to know what the host is like. You know, people will randomly take the opportunity, oh, I'm going to go on the radio, this is great. Well, you need to know who it is who's on the other side of the mic. Who's the host? What's their views? How do they roll? What are they, you know, you only need to listen to you for about a half an hour to learn your style. And then you adjust your style, or you understand what you're going into when you have that conversation. It's like going into a job interview. If you haven't Googled the people who are on the other side of the table, don't bother going into the interview. And so that's another thing, is be ready for the style of the host.
And you're going to get pushback if you mischaracterize a host position. You just are.
100%.
You go on their show and say, you think COVID is over? That's not what I think. It's not what I said. And of course I'm going to stop you and say, that's just not true.
And it's not... You've been very clear from March 2020. You know, you continue to broadcast from home. You continue to, you know, not be in huge, large social situations very often. You continue. Your history on COVID is very clear. It's very clear.
Well, just to be clear, I don't broadcast from home because of COVID anymore. That was an agreement when they moved the show earlier in time. I go into the station occasionally. But see, I want people to know what the truth is and they can make up their own minds. But yeah, it's just, you know what my real opinions are. And you can disagree with them all you want, but I'll stand by them. But I'm not going to let you come on the show and basically call me a liar.
Lead with that. Let me correct your misinformation right off the top.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Bill.
Karen Gordon of Gordon Strategy, Reputation Rescue, The Morning Rush. All
this
late night
talking. This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
Soccer day in Canada. I am beyond excited about this World Cup match today. Look, I know it's Belgium. They're the favorites. A lot of people think they're going to win the whole thing. It's a really good team. And Canada is a much better team than most of us who pay just passing attention to soccer ever thought they'd be. I'm surprised they're even in the World Cup. It's been, what, almost 40 years since Canada was there. But this is the biggest stage in the sporting world. And Canada is going to be there. And all of our stars are healthy and ready to go. Everybody, yes, everybody. So that's going to be fun. 2 o'clock this afternoon. It's kind of all I want to talk about today, but I know we're not a sports station, and I'll have a meeting after the show, and Peter Angioni will be, you know, we're not a sports station. That was a little long with Gord on the Sens. I know, but it's, you know, well, it's only a couple of days a week, and I get excited. This is beyond, though. This is beyond just a sports talk show, beyond a sports talk issue. I think even people who don't pay much attention to sports in general, they're dialed in on this one, right? This is like the Olympics, or it's something bigger. It's when a whole society gathers around their TV sets in restaurants and bars and at home, and they call in sick, and everybody wants to be part of this, and it's the opening game for Canada. And if you think, yeah, but how are they going to beat Belgium? You look at yesterday, Saudi Arabia beat soccer giant Argentina. Nobody expected that. The experts say it may be the biggest upset in World Cup history. So, you can't count Canada out. This is going to be a lot of fun. That's number one on my mind. Got a little exciting at the Emergencies Act inquiry yesterday. Somebody had to be tossed out. Yeah, it's still going on. I know I'm having trouble now keeping up with it. Until the Prime Minister testifies on Friday, then I'll really focus in. But it was interesting yesterday. The Public Safety Minister, Marco Mendicino, was testifying. And it was interesting. He said MPs in the city were concerned that protesters would try to find where they live. You know, in retrospect, is that maybe an overreaction? Perhaps. But I, at the time, I could see that that's probably true. You know, we were all kind of whipped up into a frenzy and really worried and wondering what's going to happen next. Mendicino says security on Parliament Hill was a major concern even before the protesters arrived.
This was a movement that in some cases was prepared to attack our democratic institutions to force change around policies.
And he said in those days before the convoy actually arrived, security details around members of Parliament and cabinet ministers had to change for several of his colleagues.
We were concerned about whether or not the blockade might target the Prime Minister. And then, as you will have heard by now, there were subsequent many threats that were made towards not only elected public figures, but equally law enforcement and representative of the media.
Okay, I know you're getting it. Well, so what happened? Get to the throwing out part. All right, well, emotions got heated. A lawyer representing the Freedom Convoy protesters was tossed from the room over interrupting the Justice Paul Rouleau. Lawyer Brendan Miller repeatedly pushed for a member of Public Safety Minister Marco Mendicino's staff to testify, at times ignoring the commissioner's instructions.
Commission counsel has not completed her
presentation. I understand, but sir, and your counsel's advised you that...
No,
I know you've directed,
sorry,
you wanted the
I'm
application.
Sorry, I'm speaking.
Yes, sir.
Ooh, so he was ordered out of the room over that little back and forth.
Sorry, you wanted the I'm application. Sorry, I'm speaking.
It's not
I'm
been
speaking.
Ruled on, and okay. It's been filed for
I
days.
I will take a break while you're asked
sir?
To leave.
Okay, well, that's pretty clear. And he was getting up as he was saying that. I'm out of here. I'm not... I'm in charge. You're not listening to me. You're gone. That's it. I'm not arguing with you about this anymore. So, it didn't get as heated as last night's Board of Education meeting in Ottawa, where the police had to be called in and they had to kick the decision about masks in schools down the road, probably far enough that it'll be irrelevant anyway, because we are all, listen, surely we can agree on one thing. We all hope that this current wave of flu, RSV, and to a lesser degree COVID, we all hope it passes and it's not going to be necessary. Annette asked a great question, or made a good point on television with me this morning as well. It's complicated. Some people want to make it seem very simple, like masks are the answer, we got to do it. Let's say that's true and only the Ottawa School Board, in all of Ontario, only the Ottawa School Board, the public board, passes a mask mandate. Does that change anything? If nobody else is wearing them, nobody's wearing them in any other school, or does it? Maybe it might make a small difference, but is there any point, given then we know there are some downsides? People like to pretend there's not, but there are downsides to wearing masks as well for children's development and emotional state. And after 2.5 years, I remember saying in the early days of the pandemic, you know, people are wearing masks and keeping kids out of school is bad for their long-term development. Okay, we have a worldwide pandemic, and I would rather my kids are at home safe from that for 2 weeks. But when 2 weeks becomes 2 years, surely the equation changes a bit. And you go, okay, well, how long? And I thought it was interesting that the trustee who brought the motion forward had, it seemed to me, a little more of a compromising position. You know, until flu season passes. Oh, so it is more about flu than COVID. Huh, that's the point I was trying to make with her yesterday. Now, all of a sudden, that's what, where we went last night in the debate? Interesting to me. It's 7:15, the morning rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Good morning, Doc.
Morning, Bill.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. I'm good. It's
you're looking very well. We were talking about a Hollywood actor who did a DNA test for a TV show or a series he was working on and discovered that he has a certain gene on both sides of his family. He has two copies of it. And so he's facing a greater likelihood of Alzheimer's, and it's rocked his world. And I was wondering, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia, I get a little unclear about what's what and how many different kinds of diseases we're talking about here. So before we get into this idea of a dementia vaccine, can you clarify some of that?
Yeah, so dementia is a description of what happens to the brain when it loses its ability to function properly. In this case, it's cognitive impairment. It's the inability to look at reality around you and interpret it as such, and you end up either with hallucinations or delusions, or losing your ability to remember things, recognizing surroundings and people that you have known for decades, in fact, your entire life, and losing the ability to interpret that in a way that you used to. And so and you have behavior changes. So sometimes people get more aggressive, or sometimes they become more withdrawn. But it's the end result of processes that lead to that in the brain. And that can result from many different types of conditions, autoimmune conditions, areas that attack the brain and destroy the brain, damage from strokes, where you end up with what's called vascular dementia, where the tiny blood vessels to the brain start to clog up and you lose. It's almost like a Swiss cheese effect, where you get little spots in the brain that start to deteriorate and die. And as it accumulates, you see these behavior changes and other changes, not only not only cognitive, but physical changes as well, if you start damaging areas responsible for motor function. So that's what we're talking about. It's a conglomerate of various mechanisms that lead to that condition that we call dementia.
So with that on the record, how would a vaccine help against something that's so multifaceted?
And that's an excellent question, because that's the problem with it's a spectrum of disorders. So you would then characterize each of those mechanisms as an end leading to the end point of dementia, and then trying to understand how that mechanism works. So you can have, for example, autoimmune mechanisms, where you identify what parts of the immune system are attacking the brain and trying to block those. So the vaccine would try and do that. You then have other mechanisms that lead to stroke. So you would use medications that can potentially prevent the onset or progression of strokes. So you are dealing with more than one type of vaccine. And part of the problem with Alzheimer's, which is what this article was leaning towards, is that no one really knows for sure yet what we call the pathophysiology, or the mechanism of the disease, is caused by. And so you're sort of taking stabs at what the evidence shows to date and trying to see if that is true. So you're dealing with a lot of hypotheses, not theories, but hypotheses. So that's before a theory. You're trying to say, well, we think this is what's causing it. We have a little bit of evidence to show that this is what's happening. And so we're going to create a vaccine to interrupt with that particular function and see if this actually makes a difference over time. And because you're dealing with a dementia and Alzheimer's, which is years and years in the making, it makes it, by the nature of how the disease progresses, it can take a long time to see if that particular vaccine has been effective, years and years, and it may lead you down the wrong road. So you are looking at a lot of difficulties. Hence, you have multiple studies looking at various aspects of those mechanisms and trying it out and feeling it out. And that's what you have to do. But it can be very frustrating for people, who, especially if they have loved ones who are suffering from the condition, to say, well, wow, it's still years and years away, and we still really don't know what's going on yet.
Would you want to take a test that told you your chances of dementia are 10 or 12-fold greater, or would you just rather not know?
The problem is that it doesn't necessarily change the management, although there are some medications that can be used that can slow down the progression. But usually that's on the basis of seeing the symptoms and signs of dementia already. It's not something you would take as a preventative medication, but rather something you would take once you start seeing the onset. The problem, though, is that in early stage dementia, as people can cover up their dementia, and families sometimes don't see it as quickly as they should, or they rationalize the behavior. And it's normal. It's not a criticism of people. You don't want to admit that your family member has dementia, because the thought of that is terrifying for people. Yeah. So that's the reaction that you have. But for myself, I probably wouldn't want to know, because there really isn't any, there's really no treatment that I would be taking now, even if I knew. And so you're trying to balance the effect it would have on you, the sort of the fatalism involved in that, versus trying to enjoy the life that you have where you're still functional.
Well, Chris Hemsworth has decided to take some time off and just enjoy his family more, because he, mm-hmm. I guess he realized, you know, that my life may not end the way I thought it was going to end, and I may not be healthy as long as I thought it'd be, so I'm going to enjoy it. The problem with that is now it's in the back of your mind as well. I think it makes it harder to enjoy your life once you feel like your fate is already set, even though that's not true. It just... You know, his chances are increased, but it's not 100% either. So, that's a tough one, huh? Just trying to determine where you could get sick later.
Yeah, and that's it. And also, having a genetic test doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen, because genes are expressed by certain triggers as well. So you can, for example, cancers we've talked about and such, where certain environmental triggers or exposures can flip the switch and turn it on. But it doesn't mean that because you have that gene, in this case, that it's inevitable that that's going to happen.
Thanks, Doc. Have a good day.
Thanks, you too, Bill.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, medical myth busting, host of Sunday House Call, Sunday afternoons at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. Good morning, Doc.
Morning, Bill.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. I'm good. It's
you're looking very well. We were talking about a Hollywood actor who did a DNA test for a TV show or a series he was working on, and discovered that he has a certain gene on both sides of his family. He has two copies of it. And so he's facing a greater likelihood of Alzheimer's, and it's rocked his world. And I was wondering, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia, I get a little unclear about what's what and how many different kinds of diseases we're talking about here. So before we get into this idea of a dementia vaccine, can you clarify some of that?
Yeah, so dementia is a description of what happens to the brain when it loses its ability to function properly. In this case, it's cognitive impairment. It's the inability to look at reality around you and interpret it as such, and you end up either with hallucinations or delusions, or losing your ability to remember things, recognizing surroundings and people that you have known for decades, in fact, your entire life, and losing the ability to interpret that in a way that you used to. And so and you have behavior changes. So sometimes people get more aggressive, or sometimes they become more withdrawn. but it's the end result of processes that lead to that in the brain. And that can result from many different types of conditions, autoimmune conditions, areas that attack the brain and destroy the brain, damage from strokes, where you end up with what's called vascular dementia, where the tiny blood vessels to the brain start to clog up and you lose. It's almost like a Swiss cheese effect, where you get little spots in the brain that start to deteriorate and die. And as it accumulates, you see these behavior changes and other changes, not only, not only cognitive, but physical changes as well, if you start damaging areas responsible for motor function. So that's what we're talking about. It's a conglomerate of various mechanisms that lead to that condition that we call dementia.
So with that on the record, how would a vaccine help against something that's so multifaceted?
And that's an excellent question, because that's the problem with the it's a spectrum of disorders. So you would then characterize each of those mechanisms as an end leading to the end point of dementia, and then trying to understand how that mechanism works. So you can have, for example, autoimmune mechanisms, where you identify what parts of the immune system are attacking the brain and trying to block those. So the vaccine would try and do that. You then have other mechanisms that lead to stroke. So you would use medications that can potentially prevent the onset or progression of strokes. So you are dealing with more than one type of vaccine. And part of the problem with Alzheimer's, which is what this article was leaning towards, is that no one really knows for sure yet what we call the pathophysiology, or the mechanism of the disease, is caused by. And so you're sort of taking stabs at what the evidence shows to date and trying to see if that is true. So you're dealing with a lot of hypotheses, not theories, but hypotheses. So that's before a theory. You're trying to say, well, we think this is what's causing it. We have a little bit of evidence to show that this is what's happening. And so we're going to create a vaccine to interrupt with that particular function and see if this actually makes a difference over time. And because you're dealing with a dementia and Alzheimer's, which is years and years in the making, it makes it, by the nature of how the disease progresses, it can take a long time to see if that particular vaccine has been effective, years and years, and it may lead you down the wrong road. So you are looking at a lot of difficulties. Hence, you have multiple studies looking at various aspects of those mechanisms and trying it out and feeling it out. And that's what you have to do. But it can be very frustrating for people, who, especially if they have loved ones who are suffering from the condition, to say, well, wow, it's still years and years away, and we still really don't know what's going on yet.
Would you want to take a test that told you your chances of dementia are 10 or 12 fold greater, or would you just rather not know?
The problem is that it doesn't necessarily change the management, although there are some medications that can be used that can slow down the progression. But usually that's on the basis of seeing the symptoms and signs of dementia already. It's not something you would take as a preventative medication, but rather something you would take once you start seeing the onset. The problem, though, is that in early stage dementia, is people can cover up their dementia, and families sometimes don't see it as quickly as they should, or they rationalize the behavior. And it's normal. It's not a criticism of people. You don't want to admit that your family member has dementia, because the thought of that is terrifying for people. Yeah. So that's the reaction that you have. But for myself, I probably wouldn't want to know, because there really isn't any, there's really no treatment that I would be taking now, even if I knew. And so you're trying to balance the effect it would have on you, the fatalism involved in that, versus trying to enjoy the life that you have where you're still functional.
Well, Chris Hemsworth has decided to take some time off and just enjoy his family more, because I guess he realized, that's my life may not end the way I thought it was going to end, and I may not be healthy as long as I thought it'd be, so I'm going to enjoy it. The problem with that is now it's in the back of your mind as well. I think it makes it harder to enjoy your life once you feel like your fate is already set, even though that's not true. It just... his chances are increased, but it's not 100% either. So, that's a tough one, huh? Just trying to determine where you could get sick later.
Yeah, and that's it. And also having a genetic test doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen, because right. genes are expressed by certain triggers as well. So you can, for example, cancers we've talked about and such, where certain environmental triggers or exposures can flip the switch and turn it on. But it doesn't mean that because you have that gene, in this case, that it's inevitable that that's going to happen.
Thanks, Doc. Have a good day.
Thanks, you too, Bill.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, medical myth busting, host of Sunday House Call, Sunday afternoons at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
My only piece of advice to Canada's soccer coach. I don't really follow soccer very much, not since I left Scotland. When I was a wee lad, I used to go out the way on a weekend. I would walk to the Albion Rovers, Clifton Hill Park, and I would walk there and I'd buy a ticket. And I'd be one of like 400 people seeing I think they're in the third division now. Back then it was the fourth because they didn't have the Premier Division. Like, they were terrible, but I loved it. I loved to play it. I wasn't very good at it. It was always really tiny, much shorter than the other kids, and not particularly athletic, as I've mentioned. But I did love it then, and I've lost touch with it. But I still have a piece of advice for Canada's soccer coach, okay? This is sage advice. Leave early for the stadium because there might be traffic. You know they were late yesterday for their press conference? Yep, John Herdman and the captain, Atiba Hutchison? 40 minutes late yesterday for their big news conference. Every team has a news conference the day before their opening game. They knew that, but they didn't anticipate all the traffic in Doha.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a tricky arrival here, which it's your first World Cup. You don't really want to be keeping the media waiting, so our apologies there. But we'll look into that internally, make sure everything's clean for the next time through.
Good. Because if you show up 40 minutes late for the game, it's not going to be good. You're going to be the Maple Leafs. The problem is they're on the ice, but they haven't shown up yet. Oh, maybe that's not fair. But maybe it is, actually. Sens have had a bit of the same problem at times, too. Anyway, so, okay, they'll be on time, I'm sure of that. And the good news he had afterwards, once he apologized, Coach Herdman says, our star winger, Alphonso Davies, is fit and will play against Belgium at the World Cup.
At the end of the day, I mean, Fonzie's fit now. He's hit his markers. He's ready to go. I mean, he's flying and training yesterday, enjoying himself. You know, I think Canada are in a position now where we can field, you know, our strongest team. Everyone's came through well.
Yeah, I know. Belgium is a really, really good team, but so is Argentina. They lost yesterday. Biggest upset in World Cup history, some call it. I don't think, would this be bigger? I think it might be. I think if Canada beat Belgium, it might be bigger. I'd have to look at where Saudi Arabia is ranked in the world. I'll do that. I will do that. But it certainly would be huge. But Canada has surprised a lot of people along the way. So I sit down in front of a TV this afternoon at 2 o'clock, filled with hope. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
You're listening to the Morning Rush. Hey, baby. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
So if you thought you'd wake up this morning and know whether or not your kids would be wearing masks to school, if your kids, mine are not, members of the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board, but if your kids are, you were wondering, would there be a mask mandate? And the answer is, maybe. I actually don't know what the long-term answer is, but there was a no decision last night. This could have actually started a trend that might have gone to other boards as well. But for the moment, we sit there with, we're no further ahead than we were yesterday. The OCDSB chair of the Board of Trustees is Lyra Evans on the line right now. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
So what happened last night? It sounded like it got very out of control. What went wrong there?
So our meetings are open to the public, and we had about 100 people, 120 people, show up to our meeting. And we did hire security for the event, but a lot of people showed up without an intention to listen to the discussion. So we had on the chief of staff of CHEO, we had public delegations in favor of the masking requirement, we had public delegations against the masking requirement, and members of the audience seemed unable to listen without commentary. And commentary from a crowd looks like cheering or like booing or clapping, and the members of the trustees just were unable to hear the discussion that was supposed to be happening.
So, I mean, how bad did it get? At one point, I understand the police had to get involved.
Yes. So we did end up having to notify police and trespass a number of individuals who refused to leave the premise when asked to do so.
And after that, did you finally have a chance to have any kind of discussion about it? Did you at least begin the conversation?
We did. So around 8:45, 9 o'clock, we managed to start having the motion made it to the floor. We heard from all of our community partners, all of our delegations. We started to discuss, and we started to amend the motion that had been put forward.
So where does that leave you then? So, because a lot of parents are saying there was a non-decision, it'll come up later. What specifically does that mean?
So when the board hits 10:30, we need two-thirds of people around the table to support continuing, because the meetings can go quite late and people have got to drive quite a distance. And many people around the table have day jobs. And so at 10:30, we held the vote to say, do we want to continue discussing this? Do we think we're going to come to a conclusion anytime soon? And the answer around the table was no. And so when that happens, we take all of the things that we are currently discussing and we refer them to another meeting. So I'm going to have a conversation with staff and trustees to figure out when the next available time for folks is, and we're going to just pick up right where we left off.
Next available time, though, with a board meeting, are we talking days, weeks, longer?
So I am looking at Thursday and Friday. I'm going to see if staff are available, and I'm going to see if other trustees are available for Thursday or Friday. But that is the timeline. So we're looking at days. If it's not Thursday or Friday, it will be sometime early next week.
Okay, well, that's very fast. I mean, you there's no point in doing it a month or two from now when, with any luck, perhaps some of the wave will have passed and the crisis will have been we didn't avert it. It's already here, but maybe it will have passed as well. This is pretty quick. How will you address the problem with having the public there? These are public meetings. Public has a right to go. How are you going to control it next time?
So we brought on security. We're probably going to bring on better security or more security. And rely on them to help control the meeting or to help control the crowd.
Okay. But I guess that's all you can do, right? But there's no guarantee you'll be able to do it. Did you feel that you got any information? I don't know if you had a position on masks and schools going into this or not, if you go in with an open mind, but where do you stand now? And has that changed based on the little bit you heard last night?
So I came to the table to listen. I had concerns about the mask mandate that was put on the floor. There were things that I would like to have seen change. We started to amend it, like I said. One of my concerns was that students with autism were not exempted under the previous version. That an amendment to support students who are neurodiverse or students with disabilities was started to be discussed, but we didn't get there before the 10:30 vote was called. And so I think there is definitely feedback that has been heard by the trustees that are looking to amend this motion before some of us would be willing to support it.
Yeah, I'm happy you went into it with an open mind. My public position on this, despite a misrepresentation by a member of your board yesterday on social media, I have been saying on television and radio for weeks now, you know, maybe we should have had mask mandates in our schools. Maybe that's something we should consider. And the answer, this is our chair of the Board of Trustees, Lara Evans. The answer, I think, is a complicated one, but at least one member of your board makes it sound like it's very simple and straightforward. I just don't think it is. I think there are a lot of things to consider, and I think many parents were looking for guidance last night and a chance to hear both sides, because there are two sides to this.
So there are a lot of things the trustees have to weigh. We have to weigh the loss of like language acquisition. There might be language acquisition impacts to wearing a mask. We have to weigh that against the loss of language acquisition from missing 2 weeks. Like, how many students are going to be absent for a couple of weeks because they're sick versus the language loss acquisition potential from wearing a mask. When we look at, like I mentioned, students with autism, students with disabilities, what does supporting them look like? And what does supporting students who are immunocompromised look like? How can we like make sure that we support both of those populations? And so, yeah, this is not, in my eyes, an easy issue or a decision that should be taken lightly, but it's certainly something that merits public discussion.
Yeah, and then there's the issue of whatever you decide. Let's say you decide on mask mandates. You're going it alone. And in the greater picture of the problem we have in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, the world, does it make a big enough difference? Does it, given that there are some downsides you've just pointed out, mm-hmm. given that, does it do enough to protect CHEO right now from overcrowding? That's a hard one to answer if you're the only board that does this.
Yeah, so there's two things. One, there are boards around the province who are having this discussion. I believe Durham and Hamilton this week have both also had discussions about additional masking requirements. And then to your larger point, I don't subscribe to the notion that just because we're the only ones doing it, we should do nothing. Just because other people have chosen inaction doesn't mean everyone should. I think that every little bit does help. And
well, it also could provide leadership for other boards as well.
Yes, it could.
Yeah. No, I understand that. I'm glad to hear that you are conflicted and that it's complicated for you. I think that's what we need right now when we have these discussions, that everybody realizes these things are hard and let's do the best we can for our children. And if we all have that attitude about it and not ideological discussions about masks or no masks, we'll all be better off for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of people around the table who feel conflicted about this, who have a recognition that this is going to be a hard conversation.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
That's the adult in the room, OCDSB Chair of the Board of Trustees, Lara Evans. The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.